Item number two, open public input. We have several folks that will be making presentations or comments. The rules, I think most of you know, 3 minutes, and then there'll be a beep, and you can conclude your thoughts, but conclude them with expeditious ways. I will call you up two at a time, and so Jim Olson and Cindy Olson, please. Jim, you get to kick it off this morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Commissioners and Director Unsworth. My name is Jim Olson. I'm here today representing Rainier Hunting Retriever Club. We are asking the Commission to get a briefing from the Department on the use of Cherry Valley. Cherry Valley was a piece of property purchased by the Department in the early 70s. Before that time, the property was used for hunting and dog training. So it's gone through several different deals like that. And right now we're down to a point where we're down to 20 acres of dog training, which is not near enough. We have locked gates that we cannot get our trucks to the training areas at. So it means we have to leave our vehicles locked up along Highway 203, which is not a very safe place. We have used this property for quite a few years. It's about 300 acres, and we'd like to use the majority of it. We put on hunt tests in this area, training days, 10 series, which is all deals for that. Talking too fast, and I've lost my points. So we've been working with the department. In 2013, Brian Boham and Paul Gilmore got approval for mowing of the Cherry Valley after years of neglect. And we had mowed it, and later in that year, it went in for to have the ditches repaired and dike repair, and the gates have been locked and never opened since for us to use. So, do we have any questions?
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you know, Jim, I'm pretty familiar with what you're dealing with. I have raised Labradors and run hunt tests and Labradors in the past, and I'm very familiar with this activity. I don't know why it's got to this point. I truly don't. I've talked to Bob Everett about it. I've talked to a lot of the dog training people, Dahlheims and others, about it. I don't understand if this is a personal thing or what the heck's going on there, but a briefing is in order, and we'll deal with it.
Thank you, Larry.
Other questions? Then, Cindy, before you, Joe? Come up, and Cindy.
I just want the staff.
Okay, my name is Cindy Olson, and I'm representing Washington Retriever Club. Again, another dog organization that has periodically used Cherry Valley for some of their picnic trial events. And we became aware that Cherry Valley was not able to be used the way it was historically when we went out and saw the sign posted on the property saying we could use a maximum of about 20 acres. Historically, we've used probably over 200 acres for the various different activities. And that's been going on since the early 70s or before the land was even purchased by the state. So the dog community was invited to attend a 10-year planning session for the Snoqualmie Wildlife Area, which was well attended by the dog community. By a show of hands, the majority of the people there that day were from the dog community, and a further show of hands showed that the people that were there also hunted with their dogs. So they train their own dogs, and then they hunt with their dogs, and they need land in order to continue to do that training process. The thing that we came away from as a group from that meeting was there seems to be an agenda within the department to lock the dog community out of the Cherry Valley lands. And that is supported by some email copies that we got where they're specifically saying they want to keep the dog training people out. The fact that it was overgrown with canary grass so that we couldn't use it because it was too tall to train,
they felt that was a good way to keep us out. If they didn't mow it, then we wouldn't be able to use it, and they wouldn't have an issue with us. So at the meeting, we tried to find out whether or not they would be willing to allow us to continue to mow the land. The dog training groups took up a collection, and we even have a fund of money to pay for that process. Obviously, it would be better for everybody, including the wildlife, if the canary grass were removed and natural grasses put in that could be better used for wildlife as well as our purposes as dog training. So I spent quite a bit of time after that meeting working with the other clubs, trying to have each of them put forth their letters to the commission to request that you consider the historical use of the land and figuring out why there's this, what we think is a sub-agenda to keep the dog training community off that property. So again, we're just looking for your help to look into the situation and help resolve and hopefully restore to us the use of the land. And I know Jim mentioned that the gates are locked. The gates always previously were unlocked. Well, when we're leaving dogs in vehicles that are now a significant distance from where we are, we're uncomfortable at leaving our animals in locked cars, in the heat, whatever. So that is a major concern for us. And Cherry Valley offers us wetlands and training water dogs for retrieving ducks and birds. The wetlands are key to us in that training process. And we just don't have the availability of the private lands that the pro trainers do. So this is very important to the amateur trainers.
Thank you, Cindy, and thank you, Jim. And I think Commissioner Carpenter echoed the point that we appreciate you bringing this issue to our attention. Other comments from the... Yes.
I guess after watching Larry sit there and nod his head, you got this one covered. You'll be on... keep as the commission...
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Is that like keeping him on point?
Yes.
And the dog.
We know he won't retrieve.
It's been used for.
So again, thank you, Cindy. Thank you, Jim.
And thank you all for your time.
And Andrew.
Some of these dogs.
Joe, it's up to you.
Good morning, commissioners and director. My name is Joe Verdos, commercial prawn fisherman, Anacortes, Washington. And today's a great day. It's my birthday, so it's important. Well, it's important to me to be here, and that's an example of how important it is to me. I wanted to be here when the prawn briefing was given a couple months ago, but my sons were in the regional competition for robotics in Portland, and I had to make a choice between my profession and my sons, so obviously my sons won. They went on to the St. Louis Championships later on, so... But I'm here primarily today to talk about something I know is later on your agenda regarding the climate change and the effects of management on that. And I've given you a handout. I don't know if it's been passed out to you right now, but it's a rework of something I did a couple of years ago regarding the carbon costs of replacing Puget Sound commercial prawn harvesting with recreational prawn fishing. So the synopsis on that is every week you take me off the water is an increase of... 12,000 to 13,000 pounds of CO2 per week for individual fishermen. So I'm actually pretty green. I'm on the Port Commission, and I'm probably the greenest person on there, but that's not any coincidence. It's because I'm a harvester, and I understand the need to keep a good, sustainable system out there, and I'm proud of the fisheries I'm in, the commercial prawn fishing and commercial crabbing, that we are extremely sustainable fisheries. I am concerned about the acidification of Puget Sound and what it's going to do onto the larvae of crab and shrimp. You know, that's a worry into the future. So I guess I'd have to say, to end this particular point, I don't think that using gas is an economic development tool, and I don't think it's a way the department should be looking at things. The more gas we churn through boats to put on the water, not necessarily good economic development, nor is it good for the citizens and the resources of the state of Washington. Moving rapidly on to what I missed in the prawn briefing was the increase of prawns in Region 1 from 80 to 160. We continue on the path of trying to find ways to take prawns away from commercial fishermen and give them to recreational fishermen who have yet found a way to access them all. But the department's not done trying yet. I'm sure they will continue to try and reduce our catch by as much as they can possibly. Last year we caught 114,000 pounds of prawns. Our allocation was about 92, similar to this year, but because the recreational weren't able to catch what the state had given them in areas, we were able to catch up to about 35 or 37% of it. This year, again, is the department going to be successful on dealing with their favorite children, which is the recreational fishermen, and getting rid of our fishery? So that, and lastly, I have a meeting with the governor next week, and I'm going to talk about the environmental stuff. I'm going to talk with him about commission appointments and the community values that the citizens value commercial fishing, and that's important to be represented on the commission. You missed half of my notes, but you probably understand already anyway. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe. Any questions? Thank you, Joe. Nello and Andrew?
Good morning, Chairman Smith and commissioners and Director Unsworth and staff. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm here to speak about Puget Sound and the recent North of Falcon debacle. Something most of you are intimately familiar with. You've been given a document that was distributed by the Recreational Fishing Committee on May 26th, identifying the need for reforming co-management in the North of Falcon process. It was held in abeyance until the 2016 North of Falcon belated agreement was announced out of concern that it could possibly have negative impact on the negotiations to reach an agreement and reopen seasons. Thanks to the diligence, professionalism, and intestinal fortitude of your director and staff, they were able to reach a one-year agreement that provides some opportunity for the state's fishers. However, through the events of the past 2 months, this process has been exposed for what it is, a failed and ineffective procedure that harms both the citizens of the state and our Chinook and Coho salmon resources. The handout outlines the gross inequity in the current Puget Sound co-management system results and makes recommendations for reforms. I encourage you to review it. The current requirement for receiving a joint federal permit has enabled some tribes to negotiate in bad faith with little or no consequences. In fact, while the state was forced to shut down all its fisheries, NOAA Fisheries turned a blind eye as some tribes fished without a permit and continue to fish without a permit, and then produced a 182-page biop covering other tribal fisheries, and they did so in just 6 calendar days. Yet, NOAA Fisheries refused to consider a standalone permit for the state, and it is unclear when the joint permit will be approved to get our fisheries open again. This is harming businesses, recreational anglers, and this department. It's unacceptable. Fixing this broken system will involve significant dedication of staff resources and, with little doubt, involvement of elected officials and perhaps the courts to develop workable processes for resolving disputes. The current system of one-sided capitulation is unfair and not consistent with the Bolt decision or the law. This effort will require and begs your full support, lest this year's debacle go for naught or that we repeat it again next year and years to come. We must make the process more transparent. Sunshine is said to be the best disinfectant. The reality is that North Falcon negotiations have been taking place behind closed doors, which has fostered disingenuous and abusive negotiating tactics. Those tactics fail when brought out into the eye of an interested public, and they do not wear well in the court of public opinion. We must open these meetings up to independent observation to protect your staff and also to bring some equity and civility to the process. You should strongly consider direction to your staff to, put it bluntly, up their game when it comes to public information about the North of Falcon process. In my opinion, the process should be made transparent perhaps even to the point of daily reports to the public and press on the status of negotiation of and content of negotiations during the negotiations. I hope that our political leaders, including the Governor Inslee and the federal delegation, will convene meetings to begin making progress. In the meantime, I want to encourage the department to develop an alternative route to receiving a permit ahead of next year. We know now that we're not going to get any help from NOAA Fisheries if we ask for a permit on our own. My last comment is simply this. The recreational community came together in unprecedented fashion during the 2016 North of Falcon negotiations, and we have proven ourselves to be an important partner. Please see us in that light and avail yourselves, staff and commission, of the resources and opportunities our partnership brings. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Questions? Andy?
Yes. Comment. We were fortunate this year to have the support of stakeholder groups, and in fact, Ron Warren and staff kept those stakeholder groups, including representatives of your organization, up to date on the progress on that as often as possible. And we would not have taken the stands that we did without stakeholder input.
Let me clarify, if I could, please, Commissioner Graybill. There was no shortage of information coming to the advisors and out to the recreational community. And I was in daily communication with the director.
What's your point?
The point is this. During the negotiations, there are tactics that are employed, and because of confidentiality, there's only two ways for that information to get out. Either the tribes carry it out or the state carries it out. The tribes took their information to the press very quickly, and it was incorrect and biased information. The staff cannot do that without violating confidentiality. They held themselves to a standard of professionalism and decorum that their negotiating partners aren't held to. What I'm suggesting is that independent observers are necessary to make that process transparent. It isn't a matter of information. It's a matter of how the information gets out. I'm not faulting the staff at all. They
thank you.
Performed exemplary, very high standard.
Well, thank you. We all recognize that system needs adjustment.
Thank you.
To put it mildly.
That's a masterpiece of understatement.
Any other questions? Thank you, Andy. Heath? Nella?
Chair Smith, Commissioners, Director Unsworth, thank you for the opportunity to speak, and most importantly, thank you for your service. My name is Nello Pasinich. I'm the Executive Director for CCA Washington. Last time I was in front of you was in Vancouver at the commission meeting back in January, and I'm going to touch a little bit again on the topic there, the Columbia River policy, and in particular as we end out our last year of our four-year transition period down there. At that commission meeting in Vancouver, I was joined by roughly 200 or more people, the vast majority in support of the Columbia River policy, asking you all to help see that through to implementation. I just want to touch on two things from that meeting. The first is about a fleet reduction program or a buyback program that's listed as the second objective in the policy. I believe at the Vancouver meeting in January that it was Commissioner Mankin that asked for a proposal from the department. It's been 4 years now, and I understand it's a complex issue. I understand it's a sensitive issue, but something needs to get done. I think the perception from the public is that this part of the policy, an important part of the policy, is being ignored. The second thing I want to touch on real quick is the alternative gear, commercial alternative gear. Probably the biggest takeaway I took from the meeting was that we had a study that needed to be redone. We had to correct some flawed release mortality rates from seine gear in particular. Those who have opposed the policy since day one are using this now as a reason or an excuse to try to scrap the whole policy. I don't think that's appropriate. It has delayed the implementation of selective commercial gear. So the question again is, it's been a while since that commission meeting. Where are we on that? Where are we going with some future testing and so forth to fast track this implementation of selective gear? We're coming up now to our fall fishery, which is going to be very important, in my opinion, on the Columbia River this year. It's the last year of the transition. There's going to be a lack of opportunity, I think, from other fisheries around the state, in particular in Puget Sound and in Gray's Harbor. So I think this just elevates the value of the Buoy 10 Columbia River fishery this year. I think it's important, too, as we are in this last year, for the department to make a strong statement about the recreational priority that's in the policy. And I think it's important, too, as to make a public perception statement if we're going to ask for if the department's going to ask for a fee increase. And then just lastly, I know that the department's on a search for a new director in Region 5, and we wish Guy Norman well and thank him for his decades of service. I think it's close to 30 years, 27 years, something like that. That is phenomenal. But we're anxiously awaiting who is going to replace Mr. Norman down there in Region 5. We hope whoever is selected fully embraces the Columbia River policy, is willing to see it through to implementation. And more than that, I would just add, we hope that the new regional director is someone that we can count on to be a partner in more than just the Columbia River policy, but as we work together in issues greater than the Columbia River policy moving forward. So that's it, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Noah. Questions? Mr. Carpenter?
I don't have a question, Mr. Chair. I think I probably have a comment, and I may ask Ron if he wants to weigh. We had a Fish Committee meeting last night, and we had Guy Norman there and many other people, and we anticipate having a new purseine release mortality study in place for this fall fishery. Guy spoke to that. There's a few things that he's working on, but it's anticipated that that'll be in place, and so we can get some real data to work with. And there was one other item. What did I miss, Ron?
The survey for the buyback.
Yeah, that's in process as well. I'm sure there was other parts. It was a long meeting, but we intend for a subgroup of the commission, our fish committee, to schedule to meet with some of the Oregon commissioners in July, next month.
Oh, wonderful! Thank you.
To understand a little bit. We have to work in complicity with Oregon on a lot of these items. And so part of the process is to present the design study to them so that they're in agreement before we even launch it. You can understand that they're our co-managers, so to speak, in the Lower River. So we need agreement with them, with Oregon, to proceed on a lot of these elements. But I'm encouraged with the progress because there has been none. I agree now for a long time, but we're getting there finally. And we also recognize that the potential challenges to the policy this next year. And as Larry mentioned, one of the first steps that we want to take very soon is to meet with Oregon and recognize their concerns so that we can move forward with the policy and get it adopted.
Yeah, thank you. If there's anything we can ever do to help, let us know.
Yeah, Commissioner Rock.
Sat in on that Fish Committee meeting yesterday, although not officially on the Fish Committee. But I'm very interested in the fate of the Columbia River Fisheries Reform Policy. It took us quite a number of months to develop that, lots of sweat equity in it. But I thought one of the important things that you all should know is that Oregon is engaged in developing an economic assessment of how things have been going. And one of the not-so-happy pieces of news I heard yesterday was that the Cathlamet fish are not materializing. They're not finding any of the fish with the coated wire tag showing that they were raised in the Cathlamet Channel. And, of course, this is one of the efforts that we've made to enhance off-mainstem fisheries for the commercials. This is not good news. But it is what it is. So we've got a number of challenges, and it does look like we are going to have a serious review because it's just time. There's going to be a real significant change in 2017 when, according to the plan, the commercials are taken off the main stem. So it calls for a serious review. Just wanted you all to know.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? Thank you, Noah. Heath?
You. Good morning. Chairman Smith, Commissioners, Director Unsworth, appreciate the opportunity. So I'm here primarily to testify on the budget initiative underway. I have been the individual from the recreational fishing community that's probably spent the most time looking at the department's budget. Before I do that, you guys know I also spent a lot of time on this Columbia River issue as well. So I want to leave you with two things as you enter into discussions with Oregon. Number one, remember that Oregon tends to think about this exclusively from the perspective of the lower Columbia, and Commissioner Graybill, Commissioner Holtzmiller, Commissioner Keeney, Thornburn, they don't really think about anglers in the upper Columbia and fishing opportunity up there. So I think it is critical that Washington come to the table on things like summer Chinook, fall Chinook, spring Chinook, all of them, and represent the interests of people who, you know, have chosen to live on the other side of the Cascades. So I think that's really important. And then the other piece, I really suggest you have influence in this economic assessment because how that's determined and how you couch that in terms of what was the commitment that was made under the policy, and then how do we model that? I think there's a little bit of revisionist history going on, so I just would, you know, I'd be happy to follow up with you guys on that. But back to the primary topic here, I want to thank the director and his staff for over the last month or so. I think they've given us kind of just some informal briefings on the direction they're heading following the public meetings they had on the Washington Wild Futures Initiative, some of their early thinking in regards to priorities of needs here in the department and how they might go about funding it. And I think you guys got a briefing last night, and there's going to be a public briefing today. So I want to, that's the first time that's really been done this early and thoroughly, you know, at least as long as I've been doing that. So I want to thank them publicly for that. I also want to just provide a few recommendations as you guys move forward. And number one is we understand that fisheries cost money to manage. It's incredibly expensive, and we need to get Commissioner Mankin a new chair anyways, since that armrest can't seem to get on there. So we
don't limit it to him.
Okay. I saw that armrest. It just won't go back on. So we understand that it costs money to run a department, to manage fisheries in this day of HGMPs, ESA, all of that. It's incredibly costly. And we're willing to, you know, I think the average recreational angler is willing to pay because they understand it costs money and to pay for opportunity. I do want to provide you some thoughts as we've worked with the department. Number one, I think there's a lot of things that are state general fund responsibility that benefit the entire public. And we know where we're at in the state in terms of the McCleary decision, a lot of the general fund being diverted to education. We understand that. I've talked to the department about this. I think that you guys ought to be at least preparing a budget. Maybe it's an alternative. I don't know what it is that really outlines these are the things that the public benefits from, and this is the thing. This is the public should be paying for it in terms of general fund. Now, we understand that may not get carried forward by the governor, may not get through OFM, given what the fiscal realities are, but I think that's your budget is kind of your value statement, and there's a lot of activities that benefit everyone, and it's hard to ask the recreational angler to pay for it. We're starting out at a large imbalance, $7.6 million in terms of the imbalance that the department has identified in license revenue shortfall. So that's just the starting point of what we got to come up with just to fund the imbalance. And then there's maintaining fisheries. There's increased costs. That's going to require more money. Somewhere in this package, and I think they're working through this and struggling with this, we've got to find opportunities to talk about increasing opportunity, particularly if there's going to be a price tag increase on fishing. And some of the things they're looking at right now in terms of the concepts, they make sense, but they will also functionally be a pretty large increase for the average angler, particularly that wants to go fishing for salmon. With the potential of cost charging for catch record card, you could be looking at 50% increases, and that's has sticker shock. So we need to be thinking about that, how to sell increased opportunity. I guess the other thing I want to mention is we got to keep the cost barrier low for youth through this. If we're going to keep this sport going, keep the appreciation out there, we've got to keep it low for youth. There's a lot of old guys who like go fishing. We need to make sure we don't price them out. But at the same time, we need to make sure that the youth are still in the game here in terms of fishing. Finally, there are just a number of balls up in the air and variables here. Nello talked about the Columbia River policy. policy. We've all been through, quite frankly, an unbelievable, uncharted waters with Puget Sound north of Falcon. All of these things create real public controversy and could complicate as we head into this next legislative session trying to sell, you know, a fee increase of this magnitude. So we've really got to be coordinated and work together. So that's what I have, and right on time there.
Well rehearsed on that.
And I don't know how you crammed as many subjects into 3 minutes as you did. But one thing that you said right off the get-go that I want to echo is the Oregon-Washington thing in our part of the world. Yeah. I've talked to the regional biologist, fish biologist from Oregon, and he basically, because there again, I was trying to get teamed up with Idaho to where we could get a few more fish up in our part of the world to where we could fish on, because there is a lot of smolt go out from our part of the world. And his attitude was, oh, those are just lower Columbia fish. We're just getting paid to raise them. So the point he raised is very salient, that they just look at that as northeastern Oregon is just a place to raise fish for the lower Columbia. So, no, he hit it right on the top of the head on that one.
Well, I just want to clarify one point you made. Commissioner Mencken's chair was, earlier this morning before we went into session, Brad's chair. He does that all the time.
See, yeah.
He moves it off so somebody else gets embarrassed during the day.
Yeah.
That's not the first time.
This is kind of the burden I have to bear.
Finding out where the bodies are buried here at the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission.
You see.
We'll have to have a conversation later on this.
Yeah.
There's always lunch.
Well, Heath, you know, I also appreciate the fact that the department is way ahead of the curve on this, I think, this year, and has presented this to stakeholders so that we recognize the concerns from those groups before we move forward. And I'm very, very pleased to have seen that happen already, because this process is not going to be an easy one. It never is. But this year is very critical, coinciding with the fish policy challenges that we have moving forward, too. And I do want to mention Heath and CCA's help in many cases, keeping me up to date and explaining a lot of the complexities that we face. It's been a benefit to me to recognize the challenges before we enter these discussions.
Thank you.
Your comments are always valuable, and your partnership is very valuable to us as we go forward with all of this, because we are in it together. And the more united we can do, the stronger we're going to be. So,
well, appreciate it. And I know you know what those huge salaries you guys get for doing this work. Appreciate your guys' sacrifice, too.
And bad backs from falling chairs.
So. Yeah, long drives and so forth.
Thanks again, Heath. That brings to a close open public input.